Jim Shoemaker, Scott Jordan, and Drew Johnson are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc. Securities dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money. It's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Whether you're a baby boomer or a millennial, it doesn't seem to matter. A common concern is always money. Well, welcome to today's program. We've got a great lineup for you. We're going to be talking about some of the questions that you've been asking, and I want to remind you that if you've got questions for us, all you have to do is send them to our text line. Just type Jim, J-I-M, 901-683-0989, or you can send it to talkmoney@shoemakerfinancial.com. The question today is, should I own gold in my portfolio, or as they say, in a lot of times, in my IRA? I think Wyatt asked the question, and I think it's a great question, and we're going to dive into that question with two guys that know the answer and will give us a great idea. We're going to talk about portfolio construction with Scott Jordan, and then crypto and gold. Drew Johnson's going to just walk us through all that process, and in that area, we're going to be answering the question, should I own gold in my IRA? And of course, a lot of times that's based on a question, I think, coming from someone that is hearing a lot of advertisement about that. But in the second half of the program, if you're an employer or an employee, Shannon Dyson's going to go through some ideas behind strategies for controlling the employer health care costs that we see that's not only in our area going up, but across the nation. And Shannon has talked about this multiple times with us previously. And I really think it's one of the most important questions that we can go through and answer. But let's start. First of all, Scott, let's start with you. And I guess, Drew, I mean, we hear so much advertisement, so much media push about buying gold. Drew, I want you to talk about the kind of the concerns a lot of people have about cryptocurrency and gold. But I really, you're going to be talking about, Scott, when we dive into building a portfolio. So let's just start with the question right here. In portfolio construction, what about gold?
Well, I think that, you know, we always say gold or other commodities can always be part of that portfolio makeup. But I think it's important to take a step back from that, because I think when we get this question a lot, there's usually a lot of turmoil going on out in the economy and possibly some market volatility going on. And that's when we usually see a uptick in interest in gold, as, you know, either to combat the inflation we've seen recently or just as a safe haven asset when markets get volatile. So a lot of times when we get that question, it's coming out of a place of fear. It's, okay, I'm a little nervous. I'm hearing all these advertisements about gold. Should I put my money in gold? And I think I think gold can be part of the picture, but I think it's important to take a step back and let's talk about, okay, what are we trying to accomplish? What are our goals? What are we trying to do with our investments? And then we can take a disciplined step-by-step process to construct a portfolio that makes sense, that gives us a high probability to hit our goals.
All right. Scott Jordan, of course, does a lot of work with individual clients. Drew Johnson is the investment counsel, heads our investment department at Shoemaker Financial. Now, Drew, when we talk about it, and Scott lays it out and says we need to understand and we need to explain and go through that process, but tell me the ways that the client, I'm talking about the us on the street, not the big, huge investment company buying gold, but how do we buy gold? What would you suggest the ways to invest in, not just gold, let's just throw in the whole commodities. What's the ways to invest in commodities?
Well, if you're talking about gold or silver or oil, any other commodities, there are four basic ways to do that. One is to just directly own it. You know, whether it's jewelry or actual barrels of oil. I mean, you can do that.
I heard somebody selling barrels of whiskey the other day. You know, I mean, that's another buy. Get into it now, and that's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that be careful what you're buying. But go barrels of oil. I can see they buying a couple of barrels of oil. Let's see, where would I stack those? I'm trying to. Never mind. Go ahead.
Right. So you know, you can own that, but of course there are a lot of costs to that. You have to maintain it. You have to, you really want to have it insured. What happens if, you know, you've got a, you own a bunch of gold jewelry, you don't want it to get stolen, obviously. So you have to pay to have it, you have to pay, have a safe, or you have to store it someplace that'll provide security for it. So that option can be expensive for people. You can own shares of companies that are in the business of holding the commodity for people. That could be like gold ETFs or gold mutual funds. You could do that. You could own shares of companies that mine it or transport it. So oil, you know, oil drilling companies or gold mining companies, you can own shares of those companies. And the benefit there is, as there's more demand for the underlying commodity, there should be more demand for the stock of the company that does business in it. So that's a way to get exposure to it without actually owning the asset itself. And then the last would be owning derivatives like futures contracts that track the price of the underlying barrel of oil or ounce of gold and so forth. So those are the four ways.
So four ways you're talking about that. And again, now you talked, you started one that I think most people think about. Now, boy, when you said oil, barrels of oil, that kind of, I still am trying to figure out, I wonder what my neighbors would do if I had 100 barrels of oil in my driveway tomorrow. That wouldn't probably go over good in the neighborhood.
Probably not.
Probably wouldn't have a campfire in the backyard.
No, or the front yard, or anywhere in the neighborhood. But now, what about buying bars of gold? I know people that have done that. Bars of gold, actually taking delivery of a 5-pound bar. I mean, was that something you would recommend?
No, I mean, because you'd have the same issue of how would you store it? What would be the likelihood that it would be stolen? You'd have, so there'd be a cost to that.
Gold coins, the same thing.
Right, the same thing, whether it's a lot of jewelry or whether it's bars and so forth, there's a cost to storing it and maintaining it, that the more of it you have, the more prohibitive that becomes, and the more it becomes advantageous to have another company do it for you. And that's when you get into, you know, is it more advantageous to own the stock or to own the derivative than to actually own the physical asset? Because the goal here is not to own the asset for the sake of owning it. The goal here is to make money. You think that it's going to become more expensive over time, and you want to have exposure to that upward movement in price. Well, if I can get that benefit at a cheaper cost by owning the derivative or owning an ETF, I'm much better off doing that than going out and actually buying the physical commodity.
And I think that's a good point, Drew. I know people that like to or feel comfortable owning a little bit of a commodity like gold, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But another important consideration, because as Drew said, the whole purpose really of investing our money is to grow it and hopefully sell it at a higher price at a future date. But you also have to consider the cost of buying and selling, because you have to find a dealer that you're going to get that physical gold from and also sell it back to. And there's going to be a cost to buy and sell that gold as well.
So you got to take that into consideration when Absolutely. You're buying it. Guys, let me just ask you this. I think it's kind of the elephant in the room. Seems like when I listen to a commercial, and especially talking about, I think what's why it's asking is, should I own gold in my IRA or, you know, my 401k? And again, I know of commercials that literally entice me because of fear. I mean,
right.
The government's going to do this, or the market's going to do this. Now, what's the fear thought process there? And again, I can't talk about what Wyatt's or mine or somebody else's, but what do we think? And then how do we respond to that in my IRA? What's your take on that? I mean, I just feel like it's there. We don't talk about it a lot. We don't want to criticize anybody, so that's not what we're doing. We're trying to answer the question. So literally, you know, Scott, from that standpoint, where do I put it in an IRA, and would I put a bar of gold in my IRA?
Actually,
I'm trying to figure that out.
Yes. So again, that goes back to the different ways to get access to this asset class. Are we buying like an exchange-traded fund that trades on the value of gold?
The ETF that Drew talked about.
Now, that's probably easier to own in most IRAs, but there are companies out there that create these self-directed IRAs that will manage actual physical commodities like that for you. Again, there's a cost to that. You have to look into all that. If I'm housing my IRA at a place of that nature, there's going to usually be higher fees associated with that.
And you need to know the fees.
You just need to know it. Again, I'm not saying a right or wrongness of it. I'm just saying you need to understand all the costs that's going to be involved with owning a commodity like that inside of an IRA.
I know we had someone to come into the office and who had bought this particular, this has been a couple of, maybe a year ago or something. You remember what I'm talking about?
I do.
And, you know, as he described to us what took place in the first phone call and his response, that was one thing. I mean, mm-hmm. It was a good conversation, and he decided that he would buy X number of dollars. What's his lot? You know, but he would do that. He would set up the IRA, and this was before he became our client. And as he was going through that process, he said over the next 6 months, he probably got, and of course, he said 50 to 100 phone calls. I'm not trying to say he got 50 or he got 100. That's his statement. But, you know, you could sense the anxiety because he said, all of a sudden, I went from a very small investment to a large investment. I mean, a lot of money, almost more money than he should have had in a commodity.
Well, these are ongoing businesses, and they employ salespeople that, you know, are naturally their job is to sell the product that they're offering. In this case, it would be gold. So, yes, I think there's also that potential to get involved with a company like that. They could put some higher pressure sales techniques on you that lead you to buy a little more than maybe you're comfortable with.
So buyer beware.
Just buyer beware.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, by the time you hear about it on a commercial, I mean, it's too late. I mean, these companies are doing their own polling and looking at consumer trends. So they're seeing that there is a good atmosphere for increased demand for gold or silver or whatever it may be. And then they're going and they're marketing that. So you got two things to consider there. First, it's already been getting more expensive than it was before. And now these commercials are fueling that. They're taking the existing demand that they perceive is there and they're amplifying it. So by the time you, the average consumer, hears about it, the price is already inflated. You're buying it at a higher price than what it ordinarily would have been, and the risk that you're going to have to turn around and sell it for lower than what you bought it is a lot higher than the reverse.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I think that's the key right there. I know Wyatt asked the question because basically he knew we were going to talk about it today, and I think that's why. And so I hope we've answered his question and also answered your question. If you just tune in, my guest, it's Drew Johnson and Scott Jordan. That's who we're talking with right now. We're talking about crypto and gold. We spent more time answering the question that we've gotten from Wyatt, and that's a great question. Coming up in the second half of the program, Shannon Dyson, we're going to talk about some things that employees need to know about what's going on in the insurance cost, the health insurance cost, and with an employer, and that's so important. But let me say this now, guys. I want us to keep in mind that we're kind of going through this whole process, buying gold. Shannon, I know, is going to talk about the rising cost of insurance. But here we've had inflation going on, and Drew, with inflation, that's been an issue that we need to be sensitive to. That's kind of what triggered some, I think, of the, you know, the advertisement last year. Does gold do a good job as a hedge against inflation?
Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. It's often touted as that, and it's one of those things that makes sense in theory, because you would think, well, gold is inherently stable. You can't make it, right? Mining it is very expensive and very difficult. There's only a limited quantity of it that's out there. You would think that it would be a stable store of value. And in a sense that it is, but in another sense, the demand for it is very, it's all sentiment. And so it actually tends to be a very volatile asset. It doesn't necessarily move in sync with the dollar or with stocks or bonds or any other asset class. So it's inherently unpredictable. And so I don't really see it so much as necessarily a hedge against inflation, certainly not a hedge against interest rates. It's just a different kind of asset that you can own, that its value lies precisely in the fact that it does move differently from the other kinds of asset classes you can own, but it's not necessarily more stable than the other kinds of assets you can own.
Well, well said. I guess I want to shift. I mean, we've talked about gold. We'll come back to it in a minute, but we said something earlier about cryptocurrency. What are some of the challenges? I mean, you know, crypto has gotten a lot of attention, and then all of a sudden it's no attention. I mean, so really, what are some of the challenges facing those that are investing in cryptocurrencies today?
Well, I mean, I think the two main things that cryptocurrency was designed to address and intended to address initially were, one, coming out of the 2008 crisis, this desire to get away from a traditional banking mindset and kind of being beholden to traditional banks, because the idea there is, well, they say it's secure, but is it really? And we all know that history. The other idea is that when you look at things like we've dealt with recently, the debt ceiling, the debt, what out of control debt levels have historically done to countries' currencies, and making them worth less and less and less over time. The desire to get away from something that's inherently tied to the U.S. dollar, another major currency. Those are the two main things that cryptocurrency is designed to address. And so it's a rational pursuit. The problem, though, is that when you own cryptocurrency, it's like having $1,000 in your wallet. If someone comes along and picks your pocket, there's really nothing you can do. It's not like you have that money insured. You can't go anywhere and say, hey, this was taken. It's not like there's a fraudulent charge on your credit card that you can dispute. It's not like that at all. If you lose that $1,000 that was in your wallet, it's just gone. The same is true of cryptocurrency. If you just, you know, hold it on a storage, you know, system you have at your home, something like that. And so there's grown this desire to have institutions that are in the business of storing that cryptocurrency for you, keeping it secure for you. And what happens is those institutions start to look an awful lot like traditional banks. So we're kind of back with the same problem of balancing deposits and withdrawals and keeping the bank profitable and keeping the bank from running out of money. But then you also have the issue with, is it really an alternative to fiat currency? And that takes us back to the same issue we have with gold. Is just like gold is way more volatile than the dollar. Well, so is cryptocurrency, because the demand for it is all based on sentiment. So you end up with a means of exchange that's significantly more volatile than what it's exchanging.
Wow.
That was very good, Drew.
Very good, Drew. I mean, Drew, I think that's what's so important, is for people to grasp that. And if you just tuned in and you missed part of that, you know, I wanted to remind you that you can find the show Talk Money on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Search for Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker. Drew, you do a great job. I want to kind of shift a little bit, because we talked about some of the thoughts about cryptocurrency and so much more we could talk about that. But I really think when we look at this, cryptocurrency, gold, I want to move to something that a lot of people at this stage of life, being at the middle of the year, portfolio construction, the whole idea of adjusting. We have just finished. I mean, can you believe this, Drew? You were talking about this earlier, that we're now in a bull market.
Oh, yeah. We've returned back 20% off the October lows from last year. We officially re-entered the bull market in, I think it's Thursday or Friday of last week.
Right.
Very end of the week. And so, I mean, we're now officially back in an upswing.
And it's amazing, because, I mean, we're up 12%, the S&P 500. Of course, everybody knows you cannot invest in the S&P 500. It's not something that's there for you to invest in. We'll talk some more about that in a few minutes. But the reality is, when you think about what's going on in the market right now, we still talk about a mild recession, and that's still there. So I want to really lean in, and what are some things we should start with, Scott, that we should just say this is the beginning point of looking at the construction side of a portfolio?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing we do when we're sitting down with clients to talk about an investment strategy or an investment plan, and that's part of an overall financial strategy, right? The investments are an important part of that. But first thing we want to do is we want to sit down and find out what's important to that client, what do they value, what are their goals, what are we trying to accomplish, what are our time horizons for those goals, and those goals, along with the client's, you know, time horizon and tolerance for that volatility or tolerance for risk, is what really guides those asset allocation decisions. You know, there's kind of this cultural perspective out there on investing that it's a get rich quick, you know, time's our enemy. I want it now. I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to get wealthy. You know, the markets always go up. So that's kind of that cultural perspective. So we want to bring that back down and go, okay, what are we trying to accomplish? What are the types of returns we need to hit our goals, and how do we develop a portfolio that gives us a high probability of doing
it? Well, that sounds like a lot of conversation. It's a lot of discussion. And very important, getting everybody around the table. Let me remind you that we're going to take a break here in a second. They'll be back. We're going to talk some more about portfolio construction. Just want to remind you that the S&P 500 Index is an unmanaged index of 500 stocks that is generally representative of the performance of larger companies in the U.S. And please note that an investor cannot invest directly in an index. Just want to remind you of that. When we come back, I really want to lean into... When people do their planning, I want Scott you to help them to say this is their responsibility. I mean, whether, as you said, it's a conversation, it's clearly defining their goals. That is so hard for a lot of people, but this is mid-year. This is the time to do that. And that is so important. And then we'll talk about some types of risk that they're going to encounter and how to manage through that and keeping their emotions out of that type of program. Well, hey, stay with us because we got a lot more to go. Shannon Dyson's coming up. He is going to talk about what literally should an employer be looking for when it comes to really saving money and the healthcare cost at his company. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a second. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
Helping you make the most of your money. Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.
This material represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information is not investment advice or recommendation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate and when redeemed may be worth more or less than when originally invested.
Helping you make the most of your money. It's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Shoemaker. You're, of course, listening to Talk Money, and we thank you so much for doing that. I want to remind you, if you've got a question for us, send it to Jim, J-I-M, to the text line here at the station, 901-683-0989. Or you can send it to talkmoney@shoemakerfinancial.com. I want to remind you, next week, coming up, we've got Greg Valliere that's going to be with us. Our Washington update. Boy, you don't want to miss that. All the things going on with all politics, we need to hear it from Mr. Valliere. Steve Anderson will be here talking about stock market basics. And Scott will be back talking about some estate planning things that we have got to do. And just, you must be thinking about that. That's Scott Jordan. As always, he's here every week with us. All right, guys. Scott, I want to ask you, this is the question. There are numerous types of risk that we have, and it creates that, this major parts of just emotions. Talk about the risk and give us some insight in how to manage through the risk.
Absolutely. So, you know, we talked about the fact that our investment strategy needs to be driven by our goals and our time horizon. Well, in an inflationary economy, and that's a word that, you know, you go back a few years, nobody paid a lot of attention to, but we've actually seen some of that recently. So in an inflationary economy, we usually have to have access to types of risk in order for our portfolio to get the types of returns we need to hit our goals. Now, that's not comfortable to a lot of people. Even that word, I don't want to take any risk. You know, people would prefer to get a high rate of return, you know, put their money in cash, not take any risk, no volatility in a portfolio, and go on. But the reality is we need access to the types of risk that are out there in order to hit our long-term goals.
In other words, if you're going to take the risk, you're not in the investment world.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's talk about some of the types of risk. Obviously, there's market risk, and that's just, we see it daily, the volatility in the market. When we're putting money in either stocks or bonds, and in some cases, even some of the cash alternatives, we're going to see some up and down movements in the market based on how investors are feeling that day, based on the emotions of investors. So we're going to have market risk. Going to have interest rate risk. We got a big dose of that last year. That was one of the fastest rate hiking cycles on record. So we really got to experience some interest rate risk last year.
And reality is we hadn't experienced that.
Not to that degree. I mean, we always see some of that, but that was a heavy dose of it. And then we saw typically investments that are considered safer or less risky and by bonds, usually is what I mean by that. We saw those get hit really hard last year because if you've listened to the show for a while, you may know that bond prices move inversely with interest rates. So we had a huge interest rate increase last year, so we saw our bond prices go down. There's also inflation risk. We've talked about that. Credit risk, when we're buying bonds and we're loaning money to companies, we have to make sure that we're loaning that money to creditworthy companies. Now, we use third-party managers to make a lot of those decisions for us, but that's an important risk to consider, credit risk. It's okay to have some exposure to credit risk. We get paid for that. Liquidity risk would be, I need my money today and the market's not doing well, so we want to make sure we're paying attention to when we're going to need those cash flows and monitoring that liquidity risk. Currency risk, there's political risk, but a big risk that a lot of people don't consider is the risk of not achieving your goals by being too conservative or not putting our money at enough risk in order to earn the rate of returns that we need to hit those goals that we've defined.
So when you talk about when we really design a portfolio, all of this, I mean, you talked about the conversation around the table, what's important. You have to get everybody on the table, clearly defining your goals, understanding that, your dreams, your aspirations. I mean, literally getting organized and then facing this emotional problem of risk. So how you design the portfolio is critical. When we come back, I know next week we're going to talk about estate planning. Let's dive into a little bit more of the actual how you put that portfolio together. I know you kind of said it, but you didn't. Stocks, bonds, and cash, but that's asset allocation. But And diversification, and all that's important. Of course, reminding everybody, neither asset allocation nor diversification guarantees us against loss, but it does help as a method of use to manage risk, which is what you just covered, all the risk you're talking about. All right, will you do that next week?
Absolutely.
We'll talk about estate planning and some of this portfolio construction of just carrying it a little forward. So just remind you, next now we won't be able to finish it today, but next week we're going to get into specifics of portfolio construction. But I want to turn the page and I want to invite Shannon Dyson steps to the mic. And literally, Shannon, this is always such an important and very important subject. And with this tight labor market showing little sign of changing, and I mean, we've just simply knowing that we go from the great resignation that we had a couple of years ago. Now we're doing this reshuffle. Some of the people are saying it's really time for us to dive in. How do we keep employees? It can't be just a paycheck. And you know this. I mean, money is, it costs a fortune to build an insurance plan for healthcare costs around. And I'm literally saying a fortune. I mean, for a lot of employers, it's one of their biggest expenses.
Yeah, no doubt. It is. When you look at the plans that we see every day, healthcare is, after payroll, typically the first or second largest expense. And so when you're talking about, you know, retaining employees, keeping business up through recessions, you have to at some point figure out a way to control those costs because as an employer over 50, you are mandated to have a health plan. And so if you're going to pay the money, why not try and get the best plan that you can get? And everybody, if you ask any employer, they would say healthcare costs are out of control. How do we control those costs? And I think it's the biggest question that employers face.
When they're going through this, and we just have noticed recently that we've, you know, job claims have rose. And ending in June the 3rd of this, it's the third consecutive week that we've had the highest level of jobs since October of 2021.
Wow.
So this is moving through this. In fact, most everybody that we're talking to and reading said that if this further increases, then, you know, we're talking about this a real deterioration in the labor market. So when that movement, what do you do from the employer standpoint when you're trying to attract people and putting something together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that a lot of times we think about healthcare and a group health insurance plan as just a thing that we need to have as employers, just kind of a baseline. We need to have it. And too few times do we think of it as actually something that could draw in top talent and keep people at your business. And so I think thinking through healthcare and thinking through health insurance and figuring out ways that you can actually use that as an asset to your company instead of something that you just feel like you have to have that nobody really appreciates. People think deductibles are too high and they think they're spending too much money. It's time to turn that, I think, on its head and use that as a positive recruiting tool instead of just an afterthought.
You know, you talk about a positive recruiting tool, but the employer is facing just some major challenges that's just coming at them like a, fire hydrant at them. And one of them being the fact that this Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021 is a game changer for a lot of them. Now, all of a sudden, the word fiduciary, when it comes to their health insurance, and I mean, Scott, we've talked about this before on the program. We deal with this a lot of times when we're working with the 401k plans, and that's an issue.
Yes. But I think we talked about this, Shannon was on last time. I think some of the changes happening in the industry will bring a little more competition to it and help bring costs down.
And be better, at the end of the day, better for the employer and the employee.
Yeah, I think it's bringing the fiduciary responsibility to that employer and making that real. So an employer realizes, not that employers out there don't want to offer the best types of plans for their employees, but I think it causes you to dig in a little bit and not just look at things that you've looked at in the past or the usual way of doing business. It makes you say, okay, if insurance costs have gone up however many percent they've gone up over the last 20 years and we're really not doing anything different, maybe we should actually look at our plan and see how we can make changes within our plan so that we can start controlling costs. And if you look at costs versus insurance premium, costs, actual medical costs to providers is really only about 27 cents out of the dollar. And everything else we're looking at here, when we're talking about inflation and healthcare inflation, what we're mostly talking about is health insurance premium inflation. And so let's start looking at costs and see what we can do and pay as little premiums to insurance carriers as we can.
Well, and paying the right amount.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's a great
cutting
point.
Out waste is the biggest
issue. Yeah, that's a great point. Now, let's go back to kind of the thought process. Benefits, being a benefits that employers are wanting, what are they looking for in today's job market? I mean, that's kind of, you do a lot of studies on this. You work with a lot of HR people. What are they looking for when you're talking about what the average employee wanting in today's labor market?
They want, especially when you're considering and talking through health insurance, you have a family of four. So you have two children and you go to an employer, you're going to pay a pretty good amount of money out of your paycheck every month. And I think the biggest problem that we see is you have a $5,000 deductible. And for many Americans, you can't afford a $5,000 deductible if something happens and you go into the hospital. And so you're functionally uninsured because you may look at it and say, I probably need to get that test done, but it's going to cost me $2,000 and I don't have that right now. So I think from an employee perspective, when they're looking at employers and they say, okay, the common things that I do every day or every month or every year, I go to the doctor, I'm going to get some prescriptions filled. But if I have if I have to go into the hospital or if I have to go get an MRI or a CT scan, am I just going to be out that money or do you have a plan that would actually let me be able to do that without knowing that I'm going to be putting my family in jeopardy with money or getting medical bills?
Yeah, that's a big issue.
It's a huge deal. Yeah.
When you talk about that, Shannon, I think I know the cost. I mean, really, I mean, I can see myself as an employee, $5,000 deductible, got to have something to, I mean, and I was going to save the money, but the air conditioner went out. And now I had to buy an air conditioner, and all of a sudden I have got to get four. And I don't have it, and so what's going on is this huge dilemma.
Absolutely, and you look at the amount of bankruptcies in our country, 65 to 70%, depending on what stat you look at, of bankruptcies involve medical bills. And the problem is that 60% of those that filed bankruptcy they had insurance.
Yeah.
They actually had insurance, and they had maybe a $5,000 deductible and a $10,000 family deductible, and they just don't see a way out of that. And that's a problem when, as an employer, you're trying to offer a benefit to attract and keep employees. And if it's backfiring in that way, then you have to look at something new.
You know, here's where I see a dilemma for all of us around the table. We're trying to help people make good financial decisions and also be able to, as we talked about earlier, the conversation, it's mid-year. You're going to evaluate what you're trying to do. You're trying to decide, how much money do I put into my 401k? Do I buy a gold IRA? I mean, all of the things that are going on. And you got to realize that I've got to figure out, okay, I got a $5,000 deductible, or whatever that deductible is, and you've got to be able to manage that. And on top of all this, you got risk involved. And then, you know, so the emotions, and you, man, I tell you what, I'm depressed again, you know? I mean, it feel like it's almost like a mountain to the average person on the street. Guys, we deal with this every day. But to the average person on the street, it's got to be absolutely just unbearable sometimes.
It absolutely is. And it goes back to, as an employer, you are offering this plan to your employees, and you are paying, we already discussed this, you are paying a lot of money to provide this benefit that may be having a negative impact on your employees. And so what we are telling and going out and talking with employers about is, hey, we need to do something different here. We need to take a look at what are these cost drivers. And if I'm correct in telling you that the actual medical care is only 27 cents out of the dollar, maybe there are some things that we can look at with this fully insured market or fully insured plan or being creative with our plans that we can actually cut some costs. And when you cut some costs, you can reinvest that money back into your plan and bring those deductibles down from 5,000 to 1,000. Those are some things that you can actually start to look at and do as an employer if you just have a little bit of a mindset shift.
All right. I sense a small opening in the door. I see a light. I feel a little better just by what you said, that if we'd make the changes. Now, going back to my Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021, that's where the employer has a fiduciary responsibility of managing costs. Scott said it earlier. We've seen that in the 401k side. We've actually watched that happen where costs have been forced down because of competition. That's where the market's supposed to work. What do you see in the medical insurance? You mentioned self-insured. Mm-hmm. That's got to, I know you talked about you know fully insured and self-insured. Help me understand that. Help our listeners in the remaining time. Let's make sure we get very clear on what's the difference.
Sure. I think, and to answer the first part of your question, as far as bringing costs down with having that fiduciary responsibility, I think it makes an employer take a look at possibly becoming self-insured. Because if you're looking at, why did you make these decisions year over year over year if it was negatively impacting your employees? Well, we didn't make the move when we should have, or whatever the reasons are, but it opens that door for self-insuring. And self-insuring is basically taking on a little more of the risk as the employer. You are taking on claims exposure from your employees, taking that away from the insurance company, but only up to a certain point. And that's something where we can come in and manage that risk. What that does when you take on the claims and some of the risk for your employee claims is it opens the door to understand what types of claims are going on within your company. Today, fully insured company or employers that are fully insured, they don't have access to the data. When you have access to the data and the door is open to see, okay, this is what is going on. I had 20 people that went to this facility to get an MRI at an average cost of $4,000 per MRI. If they had just taken a left instead of a right and gone a half a mile more down the road, they could have paid $1,000 per MRI instead of four.
And an MRI is an MRI.
MRI is MRI, and you could save $3,000 per MRI. And there's when the door opens to that type of data, then you can start making decisions that actually affect the bottom line.
And Scott, that's really the fiduciary side.
It is. I think what the fiduciary responsibilities brings is some of that transparency to it, because as a fiduciary, you're responsible for looking a little more into the details. You know, if you're hands off, not paying attention, like Shannon said, there may be costs that can be saved just by really examining what's going on inside the plan and where we might be able to cut costs.
That's so critical, too. And I know when you said looking at and examining the plan, Shannon, you've got an evaluator. What do you call that? This thing that allows a person, you know, the HR people, the people in charge, to go through and evaluate their health care plan.
Yeah, so we are a part of a national organization called Health Rosetta, and Health Rosetta has developed a proprietary plan grader. That plan grader is something that we use and take to employers, and not only to help that employer understand this is where your plan has deficiencies, this is where your plan is strong. But when you bring that fiduciary requirement or responsibility back into the picture, now we're going to keep that plan grade and we're going to grade your plan every single year. And so if there ever is a question on what decisions you made and why you made these decisions on your health plan, we pull the health grader out and say, well, we were only at a 45% in this category. Today we're at 65%. So we have improved the plan over the last year.
And that's the reason why you're kind of saying that's important every year, the Department of Labor is going to be, as a fiduciary, and with this particular plan, this Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021, you can get a call from the Department of Labor. And Scott, that to a 401k where you've got the person who's the provider, and then you've got the trustee, and that's basically what's happening in the health insurance side. That call from the Department of Labor, it gets your attention.
That can be a scary thought, but what they're looking at in most cases is process, that you're following a principled due diligence process to make sure that you're making the best decisions on behalf of your employees. And I think, again, going back to what we're saying, what that does and what we've seen it do in the 401k world is bring about that transparency. And then you get, you know, companies that actually look at it and they have to compete on cost because somebody has really taken the time to look at what's going on. So I think all in all, even though it's a scary thought for the employer to be that fiduciary, I think it's going to bring about positive change in the industry.
And Scott, that's exactly right. That is what the plan grader does for the employer. We're not just looking at cost of the plan. We're not just looking at another cat. We're looking at 8 different categories of your plan. And when you can show, if you ever did have an audit, and you can show that person, we dive deep into every single category of our plan, and we try to improve each category. I think that's a pretty good process that you could show them, and maybe you would get off without too much of an
issue. Well, you know, you said the word scary, and I totally understand that, because when I said the word Department of Labor, that should get your attention. That's kind of like a blinking light. Okay, they're on the phone. And we've had that to happen at the office. We've had some clients with 401k plans that's happened. But as you said, when you've got the data, you don't go and get all shook up about it. You have confidence that we can provide through systems that will guide us through that. That's a process. That's what it's about.
And in many cases, when you start to show that process, that kind of
stops the whole
process.
Thing.
They're like, okay, looks like you guys are doing what you're supposed to do.
And by the way, when you do have a process like that, it does help. It's going to bring down costs over the years. There's just no doubt about it.
One of the biggest questions, I guess, I want to make sure that you as our listeners get is the understanding, and I know it's a question we'd all have, about the plan grader. So Shannon, plan grader is so vital to everybody when we talk about this as far as employers are concerned.
The plan grader is really the first step. And so if you're taking or making a move from a fully insured plan to a self-funded plan, the first thing we need to do is understand where your plan is and where your plan can actually get to. And the way to do that is the plan grader. It has 8 steps that we grade of your plan, where you have a baseline, and then it shows where we can improve and how we can improve to make your plan a better plan and bring costs down, or at least bring them under control.
And then you continue to do that year after year.
Every single year we do that. We keep those scores and we can pull those out if we need them, if we ever get an audit.
If you would like to talk to Shannon, you can reach him at 901-757-5757. Don't hesitate to give Shannon a call. I want to thank both Shannon, Drew Johnson, and Scott Jordan. They have done a great job getting your questions answered today. We've talked about crypto and gold. We've talked about putting a plan together. And Scott's coming back next week and really dive into that and the whole idea of portfolio construction. If you want to talk to these guys, 901-757-5757. You can find our show. I'll remind you about this all the time at Talk Money on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Search for Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker. Subscribe to the podcast. We so much appreciate it. Again, if you have questions, type Jim to the text line, J-I-M. Text line is 901-683-0989, or you can send it to talkmoney@shoemakerfinancial.com. Next week, my guest, Greg Valliere, Washington Update. You don't want to miss that. Boy, so much going on in Washington right now. Steve Anderson will be with us, Stock Market Basics. Scott will be back talking about the portfolio construction that we always want to listen to and estate planning basics. Don't want to miss that. That's Saturday morning at 7 a.m. and Sunday at 9 a.m. I want to thank our producers, Tyler Springs and Maximilian, guest and content coordination, Francis Fortner, production and marketing assistant, Laura Norsworthy, compliance officer, Tommy Armstrong. Thanks so much for listening. We are for you, and we're here every week helping you make the most of your money. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
Jim Shoemaker, Scott Jordan, and Drew Johnson are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc., securities dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money. This has been Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.